From NPR News, this is live special coverage of an address by President Barack Obama from Afghanistan. I'm Audie Cornish. The president is about to deliver an address to the American people as he wraps up a surprise trip to Afghanistan. It comes exactly 1 year after he announced that Navy SEALs had killed Osama bin Laden. The president arrived in Afghanistan this afternoon. It's now 4 a.m. there. Earlier, he signed an agreement with President Hamid Karzai that spells out the U.S.-Afghan partnership after American combat troops pull out. Here in the studio with me is NPR White House correspondent Scott Horsley. Hi there, Scott.
Good to be with you, Audie.
Give us some context for this speech. Why now?
Well, officially, the president wants to highlight this strategic partnership agreement that he signed with the Afghan government. On the one hand, this shows that the U.S. has a lasting commitment to Afghanistan, but it also underscores that the beginning of the end of the combat operation is now in sight. Earlier, the president told troops at Bagram that there is light on the horizon for them. And as you say, of course, it escapes no one's notice that this is the anniversary of the killing of Osama bin Laden, who hatched the 9/11 plot in Afghanistan.
Now, what will you be listening for in this speech?
Well, it's going to be how the president sort of navigates those two different messages he wants to send. On the one hand, letting people know that the war is coming to an end, while at the same time making it clear that the U.S. doesn't plan to abandon Afghanistan altogether.
And you're listening to special coverage from NPR News. We're expecting President Obama to begin his address soon to the American people. He'll be speaking live from Afghanistan, the Bagram Air Base. The speech is, we're expecting to hear him outline some of the information.
Good evening.
Here we go.
From Bagram Air Base. This outpost is more than 7,000 miles from home. But for over a decade, it's been close to our hearts. Because here, in Afghanistan, more than 500,000 of our sons and daughters have sacrificed to protect our country. Today, I signed a historic agreement between the United States and Afghanistan that defines a new kind of relationship between our countries, a future in which Afghans are responsible for the security of their nation, and we build an equal partnership between two sovereign states, a future in which war ends and a new chapter begins. Tonight, I'd like to speak to you about this transition. But first, let us remember why we came here. It was here, in Afghanistan, where Osama bin Laden established a safe haven for his terrorist organization. It was here in Afghanistan where Al-Qaeda brought new recruits, trained them, and plotted acts of terror. It was here, from within these borders, that Al-Qaeda launched the attacks that killed nearly 3,000 innocent men, women, and children. And so 10 years ago, the United States and our allies went to war to make sure that Al-Qaeda could never again use this country to launch attacks against us. Despite initial success, for a number of reasons, this war has taken longer than most anticipated. In 2002, bin Laden and his lieutenants escaped across the border and established safe haven in Pakistan. America spent nearly 8 years fighting a different war in Iraq. And Al-Qaeda's extremist allies within the Taliban have waged a brutal insurgency. But over the last 3 years, the tide has turned. We broke the Taliban's momentum. We've built strong Afghan security forces. We devastated Al-Qaeda's leadership, taking out over 20 of their top 30 leaders. And 1 year ago, from a base here in Afghanistan, our troops launched the operation that killed Osama bin Laden. The goal that I set, to defeat Al-Qaeda and deny it a chance to rebuild, is now within our reach. Still, there will be difficult days ahead. The enormous sacrifices of our men and women are not over. But tonight, I'd like to tell you how we will complete our mission and end the war in Afghanistan. First, we've begun a transition to Afghan responsibility for security. Already, nearly half of the Afghan people live in places where Afghan security forces are moving into the lead. This month, at a NATO summit in Chicago, our coalition will set a goal for Afghan forces to be in the lead for combat operations across the country next year. International troops will continue to train, advise, and assist the Afghans, and fight alongside them when needed. But we will shift into a support role as Afghans step forward. As we do, our troops will be coming home. Last year, we removed 10,000 U.S. troops from Afghanistan. Another 23,000 will leave by the end of the summer. After that, reductions will continue at a steady pace with more and more of our troops coming home. And as our coalition agreed, by the end of 2014, the Afghans will be fully responsible for the security of their country. Second, we are training Afghan security forces to get the job done. Those forces have surged and will peak at 352,000 this year. The Afghans will sustain that level for 3 years and then reduce the size of their military. And in Chicago, we will endorse a proposal to support a strong and sustainable long-term Afghan force. Third, we're building an enduring partnership. The agreement we signed today sends a clear message to the Afghan people. As you stand up, you will not stand alone. It establishes the basis for our cooperation over the next decade, including shared commitments to combat terrorism and strengthen democratic institutions. It supports Afghan efforts to advance development and dignity for their people. And it includes Afghan commitments to transparency and accountability and to protect the human rights of all Afghans, men and women, boys and girls. Within this framework, we'll work with the Afghans to determine what support they need to accomplish two narrow security missions beyond 2014, counterterrorism and continued training. But we will not build permanent bases in this country, nor will we be patrolling its cities and mountains. That will be the job of the Afghan people. Fourth, we're pursuing a negotiated peace. In coordination with the Afghan government, my administration has been in direct discussions with the Taliban. We've made it clear that they can be a part of this future if they break with al-Qaeda, renounce violence, and abide by Afghan laws. Many members of the Taliban, from foot soldiers to leaders, have indicated an interest in reconciliation. The path to peace is now set before them. Those who refuse to walk it will face strong Afghan security forces backed by the United States and our allies. Fifth, we are building a global consensus to support peace and stability in South Asia. In Chicago, the international community will express support for this plan and for Afghanistan's future. And I have made it clear to its neighbor, Pakistan, that it can and should be an equal partner in this process in a way that respects Pakistan's sovereignty, interests, and democratic institutions. In pursuit of a durable peace, America has no designs beyond an end to al-Qaeda safe havens and respect for Afghan sovereignty. As we move forward, some people will ask why we need a firm timeline. The answer is clear. Our goal is not to build a country in America's image or to eradicate every vestige of the Taliban. These objectives would require many more years, many more dollars, and most importantly, many more American lives. Our goal is to destroy al-Qaeda, and we are on a path to do exactly that. Afghans want to assert their sovereignty and build a lasting peace. That requires a clear timeline to wind down the war. Others will ask, why don't we leave immediately? That answer is also clear. We must give Afghanistan the opportunity to stabilize. Otherwise, our gains could be lost, and al-Qaeda could establish itself once more. And as Commander-in-Chief, I refuse to let that happen. I recognize that many Americans are tired of war. As President, nothing is more wrenching than signing a letter to a family of the fallen. We're looking into the eyes of a child who will grow up without a mother or father. I will not keep Americans in harm's way a single day longer than is absolutely required for our national security. But we must finish the job we started in Afghanistan and end this war responsibly. My fellow Americans, we've traveled through more than a decade under the dark cloud of war. Yet here, in the pre-dawn darkness of Afghanistan, we can see the light of a new day on the horizon. The Iraq War is over. The number of our troops in harm's way has been cut in half, and more will soon be coming home. We have a clear path to fulfill our mission in Afghanistan while delivering justice to al-Qaeda. This future is only within reach because of our men and women in uniform. Time and again, they have answered the call to serve in distant and dangerous places. In an age when so many institutions have come up short, these Americans stood tall. They met their responsibilities to one another and to the flag they serve under. I just met with some of them and told them that as Commander-in-Chief, I could not be prouder. And in their faces, we see what is best in ourselves and our country. Our soldiers, our sailors, our airmen, Marines, Coast Guardsmen, and civilians in Afghanistan have done their duty. Now, we must summon that same sense of common purpose. We must give our veterans and military families the support they deserve and the opportunities they have earned. And we must redouble our efforts to build a nation worthy of their sacrifice. As we emerge from a decade of conflict abroad and economic crisis at home, it's time to renew America. An America where our children live free from fear and have the skills to claim their dreams. A united America of grit and resilience, where sunlight glistens off soaring new towers in downtown Manhattan, and we build our future as one people, as one nation. Here in Afghanistan, Americans answered the call to defend their fellow citizens and uphold human dignity. Today, we recall the fallen and those who suffered wounds, both seen and unseen. But through dark days, we have drawn strength from their example and the ideals that have guided our nation and lit the world. A belief that all people are created equal and deserve the freedom to determine their destiny. That is the light that guides us still. This time of war began in Afghanistan, and this is where it will end. With faith in each other and our eyes fixed on the future, let us finish the work at hand and forge a just and lasting peace. May God bless our troops, and may God bless the United States of America.
You're listening to special coverage from NPR News. That was President Obama in an address to the American people live from Afghanistan at Bagram Air Base in a speech outlining the post-war U.S. role in Afghanistan. Here to talk about what we just heard, we have Larry Abramson, our Pentagon correspondent, Scott Horsley, our White House correspondent, and Mara Liasson, our national political correspondent. And let's start with you, Larry. What did you hear in this speech that struck you?
Well, you know, I think the president tried to, reinsert some optimism into the Afghanistan story because it's been such a depressing story. And I think every time people realize that this is going to be going on 11 years, that this is this country's longest military conflict, the president was trying to cast a note of optimism here and say, we are near the end. Many of the men and women who I'm talking to here at Bagram Air Force Base, where he was just speaking, are going to be coming home soon. And he put all of the focus on the good things that he's hoping will come out of this agreement which he signed with President Hamid Karzai. None of those things are guaranteed, however, and the number of troops who are able to come home rapidly, that really depends on how well things go over the next couple of years. And that's something the president didn't really talk about in the speech, that there are still a lot of risks. The Pentagon released a report today saying that there are still a lot of hazards in Afghanistan and that the path forward is very uncertain.
And Scott, for you, the president has spoken to troops today, obviously talked with Hamid Karzai. What did he have to say to the American people?
Well, as Larry says, he talked about this light of a new day on the horizon, but it's a very cloudy forecast out there. Nobody really knows how this is going to work out. He talked about the transfer of responsibility to Afghan security forces. A lot of folks are skeptical about just how capable they're going to be. And then you heard him trying to walk this sort of middle path with the electorate between those who say they want us to bring the troops home earlier, quicker than the end of 2014, and those who want us to stay with a more open-ended commitment. We should say that if the pollsters are right, there are a lot more of the former. There are about 50% of the American public who feels like 2014 is too long. Let's move up this timetable. And there's only about 1 in 5 people out there who feel like that might be rushing things.
And Mara, for you, we're getting into the politics a little bit there in terms of the timing. What did you hear from the speech that struck you?
Well, I heard a president determined to tell the American people that he kept his promise. He says, the goal that I set to defeat al-Qaeda and deny it a chance to rebuild is within reach. He can't say it's actually happened, but he's saying it's right around the corner. And he says that's why we need a firm timeline, because we are winding down the war. He can't say the way he did in Iraq that the war is over, but it's right around the corner. He says we have to finish the job we started in Afghanistan and end this war responsibly. I think this is something that every president wants to be able to say. He acknowledged this is a war-weary nation. He wants to give the American people what they want, which is an end to this extremely long conflict.
Mara, one of the quotes there, in an age when so many institutions come up short, it seemed like the president was aligning himself with an institution he thinks maybe the public will view positively, the military.
Yes. Well, that's certainly true. And the president has spent a lot of time visiting the troops. His first lady has made military families one of her top priorities in her portfolio. And that's something that he's paid very careful attention to. And he is not going to be out-hustled in the foreign policy, national security, and support for the military department by his rival in this presidential election.
So, Scott, how does this trip fit into the president's foreign policy goals right now?
Well, I mean, this has been part of what propelled him into office, remember. I mean, this was the good war that he wanted to focus attention on, as opposed to the dumb war, as he said, was the war in Iraq. Of course, it's, you know, in many people's imagination, it's been overtaken by the Arab Spring, by his own initiatives in the Asia-Pacific region. And he had to give us a little bit of a history lesson tonight and remind us how we got into this conflict more than a decade ago now. And, of course, that allows him to talk again about the order and the raid that killed Osama bin Laden a year ago.
Larry, I want to talk to you about this strategic partnership agreement that the president talked about. What exactly is this agreement? I don't know if it's a treaty, if it's a pact, so how would you describe
right.
it? What's in it?
Well, that's a good question, because it is rather broad and vague. And, you know, for people who have been following this very closely, one of the big questions is what is going to happen after 2014 when the U.S. officially is supposed to exit the combat role that it's in and simply turn into a counterterror and training force. And we've been looking for the number. How many troops are going to be there over the 10 years? That's still 2024 that this agreement covers. This agreement does not say that. It simply says that we will continue to play that role of helping to train Afghan forces and of doing limited counterterror strikes against al-Qaeda. It doesn't say the Taliban. And but it doesn't say how many forces we'll need to do that. And I think that, you know, the president is saying, you know, we need to wait and see. This agreement can't lay that out. Now, the question is whether or not the military leaders are going to give us a number or not, and also whether they're going to lay out exactly how much money is needed to sustain these Afghan forces as the U.S. and the rest of the coalition withdraw from Afghanistan. There's a lot of questions about whether the international community is going to pony up any money in the coming years and whether the U.S. will get stuck with the entire bill for even that limited involvement that the U.S. will be consigned to.
And Scott, I don't know if you want to jump in here, but what does this agreement tell us about the relationship between the U.S. and President Hamid Karzai, especially after the last few months where the discussion has been about the tension between the two countries over the Quran burnings, et cetera?
Right, and some of the atrocities. Yeah, I mean, you know, this is a kind of a bow that you can tie up around that relationship, and it looks very nice, and there were lots of smiles and handshakes. But below the surface of that, I'm not sure that Hamid Karzai is any more of a reliable ally for the U.S. I still remember when the president made his first trip to Afghanistan 2 years ago, and his then national security advisor was asked about whether Hamid Karzai was a reliable partner in this effort. And the security advisor said, well, he's our partner. You know, it was pretty damning by faint praise. He was the partner that we're stuck with. So I don't think that this agreement does anything more than paper over those tensions that continue to exist and the concerns that the administration has about just how reliable the Karzai government is and how committed they are to rooting out corruption and dealing with these challenges.
And Larry, there were issues about the night raids that the Afghan government had and that sort of thing. Does this agreement shed light on how those compromises were hammered out?
So it doesn't. Those two, the conduct of night raids by special operations forces and the handover of the detention facilities to Afghan forces, those were handled in separate memoranda, and both of those things will continue to need a little bit of smoothing out. But basically, this says that, this document basically says we've gotten over the obstacles that we were sort of arguing about and that people have been hearing spats about. And we would, I guess one would hope that in the future that Karzai would have less to complain about because the night raids and other things like that are things that he has been protesting about and making offhand comments about in a way that most allies don't and make him sort of a strange partner. It'll be interesting to see whether the signing of this agreement, keeps him towing the line a little bit more and being a little bit more, of a real friend when it comes to rhetoric, I guess.
Mara, I want to talk to you about a word I hate, I guess, the optics. So in this speech, we had President Obama at Bagram Air Force Base standing in front of military vehicles, the kind of the clandestine trip out there in some ways. I don't know if it's echoing trying to remind us of the milestone of Osama bin Laden's killing. Can you talk about what the message was here visually?
Well, there was no coincidence in the timing of this. I mean, this is an agreement that had already been negotiated, and Hamid Karzai might have wanted the president to come and sign it in person, but certainly the president chose this moment. And this was the way he commemorated probably the highest point of his national security leadership, as the White House sees it, which was the killing of Osama bin Laden. And he had to go out there in the dead of night because of security concerns. But I do think that the whole trip sends the message, especially in the midst of a very hard-fought presidential campaign, he is the commander-in-chief. The commander-in-chief makes decisions, such as the one that he and Mitt Romney have been arguing about for the last 6 days to kill Osama bin Laden. He makes a decision to wind down the war in Afghanistan. He meets with the troops. These are all things that a sitting president can do. Now, that being said, foreign policy and national security are not anywhere near the top of voters' concerns in this election, but this is a clear strength for him. And the White House wants to reinforce it at every opportunity.
I was going to ask about that. Obviously, they see it as a strength. At the same time, could he be overplaying his hand, essentially? I mean, this is not the top of the list for American voters at this
moment.
Well,
I think if he talked about it all the time, he could. I think they've been trying to do this in the right proportion. This was the anniversary. This was the day to do this. And the run-up to this anniversary was the time to talk about this. I think the president would be roundly criticized if he tried to change the subject from the economy to foreign policy. I don't think there's any chance of that happening.
And at the same time, did you hear him building a narrative against his critics? I mean, last year after he gave a speech about the withdrawal from Afghanistan, you had a lot of different criticisms coming from the Republicans, kind of the spectrum of fiscal hawks to, hawks about the war.
Well, it's interesting. As Scott said, the tide of public opinion has really turned on the war, and even Republicans are sick of the war in Afghanistan. And I think what in a more traditional lineup, you'd have Republicans being more hawkish than the president, saying we have to stay. You shouldn't have a timeline. We shouldn't have a date for our withdrawal. But that's not what you're hearing now. The president did push back against both criticisms. One, why do we need a timeline at all? And he says we have to because we want the Afghans to fully assert their sovereignty. On the other hand, why don't we just get out immediately since we've already killed Osama bin Laden? And he said, well, the mission hasn't been complete. We have to give the Afghans more opportunity to stabilize. But I think he's really on safe ground here. I mean, Mitt Romney is now not out there on the campaign trail saying we should stay in Afghanistan indefinitely. As a matter of fact, he agrees with the timeline. He says he wouldn't have announced it publicly, and he would certainly listen to his military advisors in terms of the pace of the pullout, but so will the president.
Now, I want to bring in some analysis from someone who has served in Afghanistan, Andrew Exum. He led army platoons there early in the war. He later served as an advisor to General Stanley McChrystal, and he's now a senior fellow at the Center for a New American Security. Hi there, Andrew.
Hey, how are you?
I want to play a little clip from President Obama's speech, sort of outlining what he considers one of the highlights of the last few years.
Many members of the Taliban, from foot soldiers to leaders, have indicated an interest in reconciliation. The path to peace is now set before them. Those who refuse to walk it will face strong Afghan security forces backed by the United States and our allies.
So, Andrew Exum, what did you hear from this speech that struck you?
Yeah, a lot of things. The president hasn't spoken much on the war in Afghanistan, but one speech that stands out is the December 1st speech he gave in 2009 to West Point. And I think he delivered a good speech for the American people, signaling that we were going to eventually transition out of Afghanistan. But from the perspective of the Afghan people, he gave the impression that we were leaving Afghanistan immediately in July of 2011. That was also the message he sent to the Taliban and to the message that he sent to their sponsors in Pakistan. I think the president did a much better job in terms of messaging to the Afghans with this speech. I thought the line, "As you stand up, you will not stand alone," was a pretty good line and should hopefully, cause not just the Taliban and their sponsors in Pakistan, but also all those Afghan warlords who are currently rearming for what they see as an inevitable civil war. Maybe that will cause them to pause and reconsider. I think what's important here, though, is that the president also said we're winding down this war, and that's simply not true. This war is going to continue. It's going to continue for the Afghans, most certainly. It might not continue for conventional U.S. forces on the ground, but it will certainly continue for U.S. Special Operations Forces. And if you're in the U.S. Army's Ranger Regiment or Special Forces groups, you can expect to be fighting in Afghanistan for quite some time. So I think we're just going to be fighting a different type of war beyond 2014.
Which is interesting because President Obama also said that the U.S. would not have military bases in Afghanistan, I believe.
We said, and this is in the security agreement, that we won't have any permanent military bases in Afghanistan. And that's true. Of course, the United States doesn't have permanent bases anywhere aside from Texas or Georgia. Even the bases we have in Japan and South Korea and Germany, which have been there for decades, are temporary bases. In this case, these will be Afghan bases. That was something that was important for the Afghans. We'll have basing rights, and U.S. forces will be there. But I'm not sure that I think there may be a little bit of a semantic twist there.
Now, you've also, I believe, served under the former commander of U.S. forces in Afghanistan, David Petraeus, and there's a lot of criticism in the past about whether President Obama was listening to military leaders. I mean, does this speech sort of show any evolution in the thinking or sort of where we're at now?
No, not really. I mean, I think the Obama administration showed a tremendous evolution in their thinking towards Afghanistan in 2009. They went back after the presidential elections of 2009, after the rather dreary McChrystal report in the summer of 2009, which was, of course, famously leaked in the Washington Post. And they went back and, I think, re-questioned a lot of their strategic assumptions that they had. But since that December speech, this administration has been remarkably consistent about what they intend to do in Afghanistan, which is draw down our conventional forces between July of 2011 until 2014. Keep in mind that 2014 date, that wasn't plucked out of thin air. That's from Hamid Karzai's own second inaugural address. He said he wanted full Afghan sovereignty in 2014, and the U.S. and NATO allies are only too happy to hold him to that deadline. But this administration has been pretty consistent. I don't think that message has sunk in with a lot of the U.S. commanders in Afghanistan. They were expecting to have more troops into 2013, 2014 to continue the fight into eastern Afghanistan, which is the one area of the country where we haven't really surged.
Andrew Exum, thank you so much for speaking with us.
Sure thing.
Andrew Exum, senior fellow at the Center for a New American Security. We also spoke to NPR's Pentagon correspondent, Larry Abramson. Thanks, Larry.
Thank you, Adi.
And Scott Horsley, White House correspondent.
My pleasure.
And Mara Liasson, national political correspondent.